It's half past eight.
It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike sets up a board of almost infallible experts. You furnish the questions, and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in war stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 war bond plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information, Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, first tonight, a word from the pat ourselves on the back department. The movie and radio guide for the fourth successive year has voted Information, Please, the best quiz program on the air. And we want to thank the readers of the movie and radio guide, and we promise to do our best to deserve another award next year. Now, as you know, Information, Please just rolls along without benefit of any preparation or rehearsal. Tonight, our quizzes include our two veterans, John Kieran and Franklin P. Adams, and two guests. The first is the author of Shakespeare Without Tears, the brilliant Shakespearean director, Miss Margaret Webster. And to make this an almost all theatrical evening, we have with us also Broadway's premier dramatic press agent, the effervescent Mr. Richard Maney. Effervescent, okay, Dick?
Okay.
Effervescent. Very good. Now, we're going to begin this evening with a question from Eileen McGrawerty of Brooklyn, New York. A geographical question, more or less. Toward what point of the compass was each of these men headed? Get two out of three on this. The ancient mariner, when leaving port, headed toward what point of the compass? Not an easy question. Mr. Kieran?
I think he was heading south.
That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. What makes you say that?
Because the poem goes on, south we drop, below the line, and so forth and so on.
Yes. The general course of the journey of the ancient mariner was along what route, would you say?
Well, he went toward South Africa, between South Africa and South America, the tips.
Then yes, came back again. And into the Pacific and back again. That's right. Now, toward what point of the compass was Paul Revere headed on his famous ride? This gets harder. Mr. Maney?
South.
You couldn't have been wrong, huh? Mr. Adams?
East.
You couldn't be wrong either. Miss Webster?
North.
Yes, north. And and a little toward what?
Little toward west.
Yes, that's right, Miss Webster. I wish you'd spoken first. What were you going to say, Mr. Kieran?
I was going to say north by northwest. I've covered the trip.
Yes, west and north from Charleston to Lexington. And I on the opposite shore will be ready to ride and spread the alarm through every Middlesex village and farm. And the towns that are mentioned in order were Medford, Lexington, and Concord, going west and north. That gives us one wrong.
I thought he was going to Boston.
Pardon?
Uh-oh.
No. You ought to read the poem, Mr. Adams. Now, how about General Sheridan on his famous ride was going in what direction? Now, take it easy, Miss Webster and gentlemen. There are only four points of the compass, Mr. Maney. Mr. Adams?
North.
No, south.
He went up from the south.
No, he
at
was...
At break of day.
No, he was thundering south. Still sprang from those swift hoofs, thundering south the dust like smoke from the cannon's mouth. Is that okay, Mr. Adams? Still dissatisfying? True. Well, that, I think, sends a $50 war bond to Miss McGrawerty and a set of the Britannica. That's only one out of three on that. Now, how about this one from Marjorie Ann Williams of Worcester, Massachusetts? Get two out of three. We're going to give you three quotations, and they contain errors. Tell us what the errors are and give us the correct quotation in each case. There may be one error or two errors or more. Here's the first quotation. My heart is in the casket there with Caesar, and I must wait till it come back to me. There's something wrong with the quotation. Something wrong has been added. Miss Webster?
Casket is wrong. Is it coffin?
Yes, casket is wrong. It should be coffin. Any other error, Mr. Kieran?
I must pause until it comes
back. That's quite right, Mr. Kieran. Miss Webster, Mr. Kieran have got the two errors in it. That sends us on to the next. When the world's last picture is painted and the brushes are twisted and dried. Mr. Maney.
When the tubes are twisted and dried.
Yes, tubes instead of brushes. Any other error? Had three hands on that. When the world's last picture is painted and the brushes...
It isn't the world's last picture.
What should it be, Mr. Adams?
Life's last picture.
No.
Something like that.
Earth's last.
Earth's last picture, yes. What's the quotation from?
Kipling's.
Can you give it to us, Mr. Maney? Remember any
when
of
When Earth's last picture is painted and the tubes are twisted and dried...
The conundrum of
the
workshop.
When the oldest colors have faded and the youngest critic has died, we shall rest, and faith we shall need it lie down for an aeon or two, till the master of all good workmen shall set us to work anew.
Thank you, Miss Webster. And, Mr. Maney, anytime you two...
The conundrum of the workshop.
The conundrum of the workshop, Mr. Adams, that's the title of it. And how about this? Get the errors if you can. Costly thy raiment as thy purse can buy, but not expressed in fancy, neat, not gaudy. Mr. Kieran.
Costly thy habit as thy purse can buy.
That's quite right. Any other errors, Miss Webster?
Yes.
Rich, not gaudy.
Rich, not gaudy. Yes, don't we say neat but not gaudy, though, in popular phrase?
That's wrong.
We do, but he didn't.
I wonder how we got to say neat instead of rich, Miss
Webster. Maybe we were none of us rich enough.
It may be, or it may be that simply it's easier to alliterate and make it two N's. Wouldn't you say so, Mr. Adams? Easy to remember alliteration than...
I always say neat.
You always say neat? Maybe you were the one that started it.
That's a type thing about a well-known type boy. Neat but not gaudy.
Oh, yes, of course. How about... What's the quotation from, Miss Webster, the one we just read? Mr. Maney?
Polonius's advice to his son.
Yes, Polonius' speech to Leotes. That's quite right. Well, we got 3 out of 3 on that. How about this one from Lewis A. Graham of Milwaukee? Now, as you all know, on May 10th, there will be Mother's Day, so we're glad to get a question about Father. What is Father doing in each of these songs? There are going to be 4 of them played, and you should be able to tell what Father is doing in each of them. Let's have the first. That strike a chord in your paternal heart, Mr. Adams?
Never heard the song in my life.
You're not a true father. Any idea, Mr. Kieran, what the song is?
No.
I'm sure that many listening know the song. It's Daddy's Gone A-Hunting. To get a little rabbit skin to wrap a baby bunting. You remember it now, Miss Webster?
No, never heard that
tune. We played it, Joe.
No? Well, that's the tune we play here. Daddy has gone a-hunting. That gives us one wrong. Now, how about the next one? Mr. Adams?
Father, dear father, come home with me now.
Yes, what is Father doing in the poem, Mr. Adams?
He's in a gin mill.
That's quite right. How about the next one? If you muff this one, Miss Webster and gentlemen. You have no feeling for family life. Miss Webster.
Is that? Sleep, baby, sleep.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Mr. Adams. Now, what is Father doing in
keeping
sleep?
Keeping the sheep.
Yes,
the sheep,
thank you. Watching the sheep, Miss Webster.
Tending the sheep.
Yes, and what is Mother doing?
Out playing bridge.
Well, when this poem was written, which was in the pre-bridge days, the mother was shaking the dreamland tree. Now the fourth
shaking
and last.
The drinks, probably.
What's Father doing? No idea. Mr. Maney, are you a father?
Not lately.
Mr. Kieran? Oh, come. Want to hear it played again? Mr. Adams, I'm sure you know.
No, never know it.
I'd like to have it played again. Mr. Kahn, want to play it for us again? Mr. Adams.
I don't think that's the right tune.
You take that up with a pianist. What do you think it is?
I think he's trying to play Everybody Works But Father.
Nobody works. Everybody works but Father. That's right.
Well, that is the way it goes at all.
How do you do it? How do you do it?
Everybody works but Father. He sits around all day.
I like Mr. Kahn better. What's the answer, anyway? What's
sits
the father doing?
Sits around all day.
Yeah, sits around all day. Mr. Kieran
what
is doing
it
takes nothing.
In washing,
so does Sister Ann. Everybody works in our house, but my old man eats Corona.
Thank you, gentlemen. You had no idea what you were going to get in for, Miss Webster, when you accepted our invitation, did you? That gets us 3 out of 4. Here's one from Bernard Margolis of New York City. It's a Shakespearean question. Get 2 out of 3. Now, here are some lines from Shakespeare that immediately precede precede, rather, more famous lines. What are the famous lines that follow these? Here's the first. This wide and universal theater presents more woeful pageants than the scene wherein we play in. Miss Webster?
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.
Yes, go ahead, Miss Webster.
Oh, no.
Can you give us two or three more lines?
They have their who's this
exit
and their what
not. Yes,
that's the one. What's it from, Miss Webster?
As You Like It.
From As You Like It. Who, Jaques. And who says the lines that I read?
The Duke?
Yes, the Duke.
Banished Duke.
Yes, that's the one. Now, how about this? Yea, all which it inherit shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind, Mr. Kieran.
We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep.
Yes, Mr. Kieran, who says that?
Prospero in The Tempest.
In The Tempest, yes. Very beautiful and very famous lines. Now, here is another set. Men at some time are masters of their fates. What follows? Men at some time are masters of their fates.
There's a tide in the affairs of men, is there?
No, not exactly. Remember it, Mr. Kieran, to come back to you?
Wait a minute, I'm just trying to...
That is a tough one, I think. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings. It's from what play, Miss Webster?
Julius Caesar.
From Julius Caesar. Well, we got one wrong and two right on that. How about this? This comes from Jacob Epstein of this city. Name a character of literature whose occupation was the same as the occupation of the following people. Lydia Pinkham. Name a character of literature who followed the same occupation as Miss Pinkham did. Or was it Mrs. Pinkham? Mr. Kieran.
Well, the witches in Macbeth.
What did they do?
They brewed stuff to...
Well, of course, the purpose of Mrs. Or Miss Pinkham's medicines were to make people well. I don't know whether... Mr. Adams?
Somebody in fiction?
Yes. I don't know that Mr. Kieran's answer is so bad, as a matter of fact.
Medea did the same thing, too. She rejuvenated people with the kind of soup she whipped up.
Yes, that's right. Medea is a very good answer. In modern fiction, there are two characters in H.G. Wells' novel, Tono Bungay, who are in the patent medicine business. Remember, Mr. Adams, the George...
Ponderevo.
Ponderevo, yes, that's quite right. But I think Medea is a very good answer. Miss Pinkham, or... Is it Mr. or Mrs. Pinkham, Mr. Kieran? Do you know?
I was not acquainted with the lady.
How about P.D. Leon?
I beg your pardon?
Ponce de Leon.
Ponce de Leon? He looked for it, but didn't get it. How about this? A character of literature whose occupation was the same as that of Sir Basil Zaharoff. Who was Sir Basil Zaharoff? Mr. Kieran.
He was the great dynamite and powder explosive maker. The world made his fortune
You're not mixing him up with Nobel by any chance, are you?
He was a munition boy.
Well, Zaharoff was also, I believe.
Well, not so much dynamite, but munitions in general.
Well, munitions.
Particularly machine guns and that sort of thing. Mr. Meany?
Major Barbara?
Yes, who was that?
Andrew Undershaft.
Yes, Andrew Undershaft, as Miss Webster reminds us.
How about Vulcan?
Vulcan in the munitions business? That would be a very good
one. The Thunderbolts.
Sure, I'll accept it. How about this? A character whose occupation was the same as that of Jerome H. Dean. Jerome H. Dean. Who is Jerome H. Dean, Mr. Kieran?
He was
Dizzy Dean.
We call him Jerome on this show. Mr. Meany, how about a character of literature who did the same sort of thing? Mr. Meany?
Character named Elmer in a play by Ring Lardner.
Yes, very good. Elmer the Great was a pitcher. Do you have another idea, Mr.?
No, Elmer
same
the
one.
Great.
That's
fine.
The one. That gives us 3 out of 3. Here's a question from Mrs. Frances Hastings Young of Baltimore. Now, each of the following remarks was made by a famous warrior, a general. I think we ought to get 2 out of 3 on this. Who said this? My center is giving way. My right is pushed back. Excellent. I'll attack. Mr. Meany.
Polk.
Yes. In what connection with what battle?
Battle of the Marne.
Battle of the Marne. Yes. Who said Providence is always on the side of the last reserve? Providence is always on the side of the last reserve. Mr. Kieran?
Well, Napoleon said...
Stop where you are. Napoleon's right. What were you going to say, he said?
Providence was on his side with the strongest artillery, too.
Yes, it may be just...
Battalions.
I think the one you're thinking of is God is on the side of the strongest battalions.
That was supposed to be Cromwell, wasn't it?
I don't know who said it first. It's quoted by Voltaire. It may have been said by a large number of generals. Now, who said this? Always mystify, mislead, and surprise the enemy, if possible. It's a council that we're following now, and a very good effect in the Pacific. Always mystify, mislead, and surprise the enemy if possible.
Sounds like Der Führer.
No, he may have got the idea. He may have got the idea from one of the very greatest generals of the Civil War, Stonewall Jackson, who said it first. That was the first military maxim of Stonewall Jackson. That gives us 2 out of 3. And so far, we've paid out just one $50 war bond and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now here's Mr. Cross, who believes that the good old American question, what's the score, applies equally well to a baseball game, a tennis match, or a tobacco auction.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, as smokers, you surely have a special interest in knowing the results of the competition for fine tobacco at the auctions down south. That's why the makers of Lucky's bring you actual reports from these auctions. Reports which prove that at market after market, year after year, we consistently pay the price to get the finer, milder tobacco. For example, in Lewisburg, North Carolina, at auctions of the 1939 crop, the American Tobacco Company paid 31% more for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 31% above the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Luckies you buy today. Now, clearly, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Yes, better tobacco makes a better cigarette. So, Mr. Fadiman, aren't the actual reports from tobacco markets definitely worth acting on?
Yes, Mr. Cross, the score speaks for itself, and I timed you at just 59 seconds. Now we'll go on with a question from Martin Uhl of Sioux City, Iowa. In what situations are the following lines from Shakespeare spoken? You have to try to identify the situation for us. Get 2 out of 3. Here's the first line. Thy husband is thy lord, thy life, thy keeper, thy head, thy sovereign. Miss Webster.
Catherine the Shrew is making a public recantation of her previous views on husbands before the wives of her friends.
Yes, did she mean it, do you suppose, Miss Webster?
I don't think so, but I may be prejudiced.
Well, it may have been just to provide a fifth act, do you suppose? Yes, that is the situation, that's right. Here is another. Where be your jibes now, your gambols, your songs, your flashes of merriment that were wont to set the table on a roar, Mr. Kieran?
Mr. W.Q. Hamlet has a skull in his hand and is standing, ruminating over it, above an open grave where the gravedigger is throwing added bones for him.
Yes, who had the skull originally? Went
well,
Yarick.
Yarick.
Yes. First name, Mr. Adams?
New.
Poor, I think.
New Yarick.
You do come up with the oddest things, Mr. Adams. What's the situation that comes to your mind when I read this line? But for sweet Jack Falstaff, kind Jack Falstaff, true Jack Falstaff, banish plump Jack and banish all the world. Mr. Kieran.
That is spoken by Jack Falstaff.
Yes. How can he say these things about himself, Mr.
Because
Kieran?
He is playing a part in a fake scene on the stage.
Yes, whose part is he playing?
He's playing the part of Prince Hal.
That's right.
And Prince Hal is playing his father's part.
Yes, it makes it very complicated.
And mighty comical it is.
Very.
Yes, and he's defending himself, isn't he, in this scene against...
Well,
the...
it sounds that way, doesn't
yes.
it?
Against charges that Hal, who is pretending to be the king, is making against Falstaff. That gives us 3 out of 3. How about this? This comes from Emanuel Stein of this city. Identify these baseball batteries, which were together on one team and turned up again on another. Same batteries. Get 3 out of 4. Now, last season, they were in the American League, and this year, in the National. What's the battery? Last year in the American League, this year in the National League. Miss Kieran?
Linwood T. Rowe, called Schoolboy, and Barrister Billy Sullivan. They were with Detroit last year. This year, they're with Brooklyn.
100%, Mr. Kieran. How do you get to know the first names of all these baseball
well,
players?
They're my pals.
And do you call them by those names, all three names?
Well, I call Billy, but Linwood Rowe is so tall that he can't hear me when I speak.
All right, here's another baseball
schoolboy
battery.
Schoolboy Kieran.
Schoolboy Kieran. How about this? Now, this battery were with Brooklyn in the past, and this season they're with another team. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that would be... Pittsburgh they're with now, and the catcher is Lopez, and the pitcher would... Go ahead, Dick, you can have it.
The catcher is Phelps.
Yeah.
Well, Lopez was with Brooklyn,
not
too.
Not last year.
Oh, not last year. Did you say last year?
In the
year?
Past. That was before.
Oh, he
never
said
before
in the past.
Phelps. Oh. Doesn't mean this is development
Phelps
of a free-for-all.
Phelps is all right, too. He's there.
Yes, and what's the other member of the battery?
Hamlin.
Phelps and Hamlin, yes.
Hot Potato Hamlin.
Is that his real name? How about this? Formerly, they were with St. Louis and then with Brooklyn. Formerly, with St. Louis and then with Brooklyn. What battery? Mr. Kieran.
Well, Dick, you want it?
Go ahead. Mr. Maney.
Owen is the catcher.
That's right.
And who's the pitcher? Begins with D. Ends with S. Middle letters are A-V-I. Does that...
Well, he's been with so many clubs. He was with Philadelphia, then he went to Chicago, then he went to St. Louis, now he's with Brooklyn. I lose track of fellas like that.
But as a battery.
Yes, that's right.
Formerly with St. Louis, then with Brooklyn. How about this? Originally with Cincinnati, now with the Boston Nationals. What's the pair?
Oh, well, I can get one very easily. That's
maybe Mr. Maney can help.
Cyrano de Bergerac Lombardi. He's the catcher.
What did you say his name was?
Cyrano de Bergerac Lombardi.
Is that really his name, Mr. Kieran?
Well,
oh,
no.
Schnozzle.
They call him Schnozzle.
Mr. Maney?
Fetcher?
Yeah. How about it? Oh, just pick one up. Hutchings. No? Mr. Kieran, come back to you?
Well, it's just a name.
Well, I think we got two wrong out of four on that. I'm going to send a $50 war bond to Mr. Stein instead of the Britannica. Now, the next one comes from someone, either Mr. or Mrs. or Master, a person living at 612 Fifth Avenue, St. Cloud, Minnesota, who forgot to include his or her name. And if he or she will send his or her name into us, we will send her $10 in war stamps. But if he or she doesn't do that, then we'll send him or her the war stamps just marked general delivery and hope we get there. Now, how about this? Can you identify the sources of these famous O's, exclamation O, you know, O, exclamation point? Get two out of three. O, the difference to me. Mr. Adams.
Wordsworth.
Wordsworth. Can you give us the lines?
She lived unknown and few could know when Lucy ceased to be.
No.
But she is in her grave and owes the difference to me.
Yes. Very good. Thank you, Miss Webster and Mr. Adams. It was a nice duet. Here's another
No O. dough for St. Cloud yet.
Wonder who that is, Mr. Adams.
That's where I live, really.
Here's another. O for a draft of vintage. Mr. Kieran.
That hath been cooled along age in the deep delved earth, tasting a flora and the country green, etc.
Yes. What's it from, Mr.
That's
Kieran?
From Keats. Ode to a Nightingale.
Yes, that's very good, Mr. Kieran. That gives us two O's out of two. Here's the third and last O. O, beautiful for patriot dream. O, beautiful for patriot dream. The syntax is a little confused, seems to me, but that's the first line of what poem? Mr. Adams, any idea? I can practically hear you thinking, Mr. Adams.
How's it go after that?
Well, I wonder whether that couldn't be... I'll give you two or three lines. O beautiful for patriot dream that sees beyond the years thine alabaster cities gleam undimmed by human tears. Doesn't come back to you? I imagine any school child would know that. Who was it said that, Mr. Kieran? Any schoolboy would know that. Macaulay, was it?
Yes.
It's from America the Beautiful by Catherine Lee Bates. That gives us two out of three. The first line of famous stanza of America the Beautiful. Now, here's one from Jacob Klein of New York. Get two out of three. What man was first a consul and then an emperor? First a consul, then an emperor. Mr. Maney?
Bonaparte.
Yes, Napoleon Bonaparte. Now, what man was a president and then an emperor? First a president and then an emperor. Mr. Kieran?
I think Napoleon III.
Napoleon III, yes. What man was a king and then a duke? A king and then a duke. Miss Webster?
Edward Windsor.
Yes, king and now a duke of Windsor. That's quite right. That gives us three out of three. Now, how about this from Mrs. Charles A. Bradley of Jackson Heights, Long Island? These are three quotations that are all about the virtue called pity. Now, what is the pity about, or why is there pity in each of these quotations from Shakespeare? Here's the first. "'Tis true, 'tis true, 'tis pity, and pity 'tis, 'tis true." What is a pity, Mr. Kieran?
Well, that's Polonius. Telling his idea of Hamlet's madness to
yes,
the king.
That's quite right. And he said, it's a pity that Hamlet is mad, is what he means, yes. How about this? But yet the pity of it, Iago. Ah, Iago, the pity of it, Iago. What's the pity about, Miss Webster?
Of Desdemona's supposed unfaithfulness.
Yes, that she should be at once so lovely and yet so false from Othello. Now, how about this? This is the hard one. And pity, Like a naked newborn babe striding the blast, or heaven's cherubim horsed upon the sightless couriers of the air, shall blow the horrid deed in every eye, and I hope Mr. Maurice Evans is not listening to me. Miss Webster.
It is Macbeth's comments on the results he imagines might occur in his imagination from the murder of Duncan, which he's contemplating.
Yes, that's exactly it. Thank you. That gives us three pities out of three. See if we can get the next one from... This is from Barnaby Conrad of New Haven. Identify these paintings in literature. The first is a portrait of the Duchess of Ferrara. Mr. Kieran.
That is a poem by Robert Browning entitled My Last Duchess.
Yes, that's the Duchess. That's right.
How about on the wall?
The painting Melancholia. You'd find that in what novel? Mr. Kieran.
Melancholy.
Yes, Melancholia.
Is that like melancholy? Oh, Patience on a Morning.
No,
sorry.
Not that one. Mr. Maney, any idea? It's the portrait of Bessie painted by Dick Helder, the hero of The Light That Failed, Kipling's novel.
Oh,
remember
yes.
That now, Mr. Kieran? How about this? A portrait of Carolyn de Winter. In what novel does that occur? A portrait of Carolyn de Winter. Mr. Maney.
Dumas' Three Musketeers?
No, it's a...
Picture of Dorian Gray.
No, we got two wrong. It's a portrait of one of Maxim de Winter's relatives. It's the dress
Rebecca.
From Rebecca, do you remember? That sends $50 to Mr. Conrad in the form of a war bond and one set of the Britannica. And now Mr. Cross points with pride to the impressive roster of poets and painters, writers, who have sung the praises of fine tobacco.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, besides Charles Lamb, there were Lord Byron, Ben Jonson, and Rudyard Kipling, just to mention a few. These were all men who loved life and the good things of life. And one of the things they enjoyed most was that wonderful sense of well-being that you get from a good smoke. Yes, they knew the true value of fine tobacco. And smokers, fine tobacco is just what you enjoy whenever you light up a Lucky. For Lucky Strike is the cigarette that is the choice, the 2-to-1 choice of independent tobacco experts. At auctions all over the South, year after year, these experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehouse men, see the makers of Luckies consistently pay the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobacco. For example, in Owensboro, Kentucky, at the auctions of the 1939 crop, we paid 19% more than the average market price published by the United States Department of Agriculture. At New Tazewell, Tennessee, 27% more, and so on. And that crop, properly aged, mellowed, and blended with other fine crops, is in the Luckies you buy today. Yes, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, and in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. Do you see now why Luckies have won the independent tobacco expert's stamp of approval? Why, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. This evening, Lucky Strike has paid out three $50 war bonds and three sets of the Britannica. Thank you, Miss Webster. Thank you, Mr. Maney, for lending your talents to our party this evening. Now, next week, Mr. Levant, Mr. Kieran, and Mr. Adams will be on hand. And as our guest, the distinguished journalist and columnist of the New York World Telegram, recently returned from Egypt, Mr. Raymond Clapper. Remember, for every question answered correctly, the sender gets $10 in war stamps. And for every question that stumps us, you get a total of a $50 war bond plus the complete 24-volume set of the Britannica. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.